This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Is the Great Barrier Reef on death row? That's the question asked and answered years ago at the prestigious Royal Society by John Varon. Except the world knows him better as Charlie. He's also been called the godfather of coral because about 1 in 5 corals were named by him. He was the chief scientist at the Australian Institute of Marine Science and author of the authoritative 3-volume set, Corals of the World. Charlie Varon, a warm welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks, Alex.
Where did the nickname Charlie come from?
From when I was 6 years old, my school teacher used to call me Mr. Darwin, until one day I brought something nasty into the classroom to scare all the kids, and she said, Charles Darwin, get that out of here. And the name Charlie stuck. I've been called that all my life. I don't answer to anything else.
So you've just returned from yet another sea voyage. What were you up to?
Back up to the northern Great Barrier Reef, basically to see what's been happening to the corals there since I was up there about a month ago.
And how's it going?
Well, it was a very horrible trip. In fact, it was heartbreaking. I went to Lizard Island, which is up in the north and has a big marine station there. And virtually all the coral that had been bleached now looks healthier because it's all covered with slime, slimy filaments, cyanobacteria. And all the corals that we thought would probably pull through haven't. They've bleached as well. So it was a very horrible trip. Terrible, in fact.
This is something that's hard for us to understand as beginners. Why do coral animals suddenly expel the algae that they depend on?
Well, corals live in a very competitive environment where land and sea and air all interface, and it is very competitive. So they get the algae in their tissues that give the biggest bang for the buck. But that means getting the algae that are as close as possible to the maximum temperature they're exposed to. Well, for the last 1 million years or so, that's been fine. But we're now exceeding the maximum temperature that they've been selected for. So the algae are getting toxic. They release too much oxygen, and that oxygen actually kills the coral cells, as it will any animal if you get too much. And so the coral expels the algae, forgetting that they absolutely depend on the algae for their food supply, and they die. And so what happens first, you see the algae being expelled, and the coral turns white because the colour comes from the algae. And then the little polyps get smaller and smaller, they shrink, and within about a month or so, they die. So that's happening right across the Indo-Pacific now. It's the worst year we've ever had.
Can they come back once they bleach?
No, the coral dies. If there's their colony, so if some of the polyps still hang on, they can regrow at least part of the colony, but mostly the whole colony dies, and it's only new seeding of new larvae can the reef regenerate. But coral bleaching typically doesn't wipe out all the corals on a reef. But this time, that is the normal story. At least they're wiping out a big part of most of the reefs of the Northern Great Barrier Reef. It's pretty horrible to see, I can tell you.
It's touching. So do we have a direct and proven link between climate change and this disaster you're telling us about now for coral?
Well, you can never specifically point to cause and effect, but we know it is definitely linked to carbon dioxide levels. There's no conceivable doubt of that. And if you look at the plot of graphs of plot carbon dioxide levels over time, you see then they're normally between 280, 320 parts per million. We've now hit 400 parts per million, and the spike is just climbing vertically on almost any scale. So it's blindingly obviously due to humans putting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. There is no other explanation.
So is there some upper limit in carbon emissions where we can just say we won't have any coral?
Yeah, we're at that now.
Oh.
What happens is that the oceans, they respond slowly. It's like putting a kettle on the stove. The kettle's cold when you put it on and takes a while to to warm up. So if you think of the oceans as being a very big kettle, we've put this blanket of carbon dioxide, which is warming the oceans, we've put it there. And it'll take about another 20 years for the ocean temperature to equilibrate to the blanket of warming we've got now. And so if we stopped adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere, kept it around what it is now, it would take about 20 years for the oceans to equilibrate with that. So the outlook is horrific.
And I've heard snippets about coral dying in the Indian Ocean as well. Is this a worldwide event where the coral is under threat?
Yes, it's right across the Indian Ocean, and it's been right across the Pacific. We don't know the extent of it in great detail because there's only a fairly narrow window of time that you can actually see the bleaching. If you flew over the northern Great Barrier Reef now, you wouldn't see much bleaching at all because filamentous algae grow on the dead coral and they take over in a matter of weeks. So as most of the coral reefs of the Indo-Pacific are fairly remote from humans, we don't really ever capture a good idea of how extensive bleaching's been. But NOAA's temperature forecast was horrific, and they've been correct. So we expected a lot of damage, but fortunately the worst was averted because the local weather in this part of the world did reverse somewhat. We had a big cyclone off Fiji, and so a normal monsoon set in before the ENSO cycle could do its worst, the natural cycle of warmth that is an atmospheric thing. So the central and southern Great Barrier Reef mostly have not had severe bleaching. All the corals would have been sick, but bleaching occurs right down through the range of corals right around Australia and out into the Indian Ocean. And as you probably know, the coral in the Hawaiian chain has been really badly damaged, and there's been endless reports of bleaching elsewhere in the Pacific. So it's been a very bad year.
Are there deep cold water coral as well?
There's reef corals that do live in quite cold water. In this case, down as far as Sydney, there's a few species and so on. That's bleaching too. So corals do respond to what's normal in their local environment. But there's a whole other group of corals that don't resemble reef corals much, that live in very deep water, and they don't have algae in their tissues, so they don't bleach. But even reef corals are quite happy tolerating the temperature we have, but when you combine that with sunlight, that's the combination that causes them to die.
So, as you've told us, coral has been around for perhaps 500 million years. It's come through several mass extinction events. It's still here. Why are you concerned this time around, Charlie Varon?
Well, the coral of the Paleozoic was entirely wiped out by the end of the Paleozoic, the great mass extinction then, and nothing survived. And the coral we have now is another group of organisms, the soft-bodied organisms, evolved. So that happens when corals can be completely wiped out. But that's never happened any other time. We've had over 30 occasions in the geological record where reefs have been wiped out as far as the geological record shows, and they haven't come back for a long period of time, hundreds of thousands of years perhaps. But of the mass extinctions, all but one of those are fairly obviously associated with ocean acidification. It's because it's really hard to find anything that could affect the oceans as much as that worldwide. So we're looking at two things. We're looking at the bleaching, which will have affected corals everywhere in geological time, and also ocean acidification. Now, corals can't evolve mechanisms to cope with acidification much, but they can evolve a capacity to have different algae in their tissues, which is tolerant of temperature. But this is evolutionary time. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of years. We're not giving corals the time to adapt to what's been thrown at them now. And as you no doubt know, the rate of increase in carbon dioxide is not abating at all. It's just keeping on, keeping on. So it's a very doom and gloom outlook. It's very serious.
Well, from the human perspective, I mean, setting aside the beauty and the right of coral to exist in its own right, as an Australian, what does it mean if the Great Barrier Reef suffers a major decline? What are the impacts for fisheries or for the human economy?
Well, for the Great Barrier Reef, they're massive. The Great Barrier Reef is worth about $7 billion a year to Australia and employs 70-odd thousand people. So there's that aspect of it. But the real harm is not a human one. Corals are home for about a third of all marine species somewhere in the life cycle, and that includes a heck of a lot of fish. So if you take out corals, you also will take out a big swag of the diversity of the oceans. And that's what we have seen in the fossil record. First of all, coral reefs go, and then the diversity of the ocean plummets, and the oceans are really the lungs of the earth. Atmospheric conditions are moderated by the oceans all the time. And when you take life out of the oceans on that scale, the oceans cease to have the same function a healthy planet has. And that's when that gets really severe, that's when a mass extinction kicks in, and that takes out terrestrial life as well.
You are listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with one of the world's great coral experts, John or Charlie Varon. Unfortunately, we are talking about coral on death row as the world heats up. Charlie, I've got to ask you, what got you going on coral in the first place?
I was doing my PhD on neuroaccretions, of all things. I've never been to a lecture in marine biology in my life. And I decided to take up diving for fun. And we found lots of corals off the coast of New South Wales, not far north of Sydney, and no coral had ever been recorded there, but there's some islands, and we went out there for fun diving, and it was a fabulous spot covered with corals, and I decided that we would go ahead and do our best to make this into a marine park. In fact, only last week I was down there celebrating the 25th anniversary of the marine park. It wasn't my doing. Our study was long lost and forgotten. But then it was picked up by another group, and that's the start of the marine park there. But my diving goes back to those days when I was doing fun dives, but I soon turned that into, firstly, my hobby, and then, as I keep on doing, turning my hobby into my job. And so I became the first scientist to be employed by the Australian Institute of Marine Science. And I have been on 66 expeditions, 6,000 hours of diving, all over the world, redoing the taxonomy of corals, the distribution, and then into their evolution and all sorts of other things. But it started as a hobby and certainly became one of my foremost loves in life. It's very easy to get very closely attached to coral reefs. They're, and it never wears off. I get thrilled just as much today as I ever did diving on a really beautiful coral reef, and I'm afraid it's been a good while since I've had that pleasure. They're all going backwards.
I can hardly imagine the pain you must be feeling to see them suffering and threatened with extinction.
Well, it's horrible. I mean, it's just terrible. If you're a music lover and you see one orchestra after another collapse for whatever reason, and you get less and less music, and that music you do get is really second-rate stuff, and you've seen the very best there is, your life becomes almost intolerably diminished. And I find myself in that predicament. It's very hard to cope with. Yep.
I think we're all entering that predicament as we see the climate we've come to know disappear and some great troubles coming. So look, Charlie, what do you recommend to listeners who want an introduction to coral and how it works? Is there a film, a website, or a book we should all get in touch with?
Well, there are many and there are none. I wrote a book called A Reef in Time, The Great Barrier Reef from Beginning to End. It's published by Harvard. It was in 2008. And that gives the science behind what we've just been talking about. Yeah, that book was the book that precipitated an emergency meeting of the Royal Society in London, which was chaired by David Attenborough, who's highly regarded in this corner of the world. Of books about the Great Barrier Reef, I think there's about 700, but of coral reefs, a very large number. Mostly the books that I've written concentrate on coral, that being my speciality. But from there, there's speciality books about fish and whales and a lot of other marine life, and also a lot of fabulous books depicting the beauty of coral reefs. So it is something that everybody really needs to see, because It really is the showcase of nature on this planet.
It's been designated a World Heritage Site by the United Nations, but I wonder how much duty falls to Australia to protect it, and how is Australia doing when it comes to trying to save this reef?
Well, Australia is doing the worst thing it possibly can, and that is giving okay for massive amounts of coal mining. It only just last month gave it the go-ahead for a mine that will put 3.5 billion tons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. Australia it's got an abominable track record. It's politicising this by spending money on the Great Barrier Reef on things that actually don't need doing. But basically, when you spend a whole lot of money looking after the water quality or trying to control a starfish that is deep coral, that is money wasted, and if you're going to have a reef, it's going to die anyhow. So every country, not just Australia, but every country has got to do its absolute utmost to get on to renewable energy and get unhooked from fossil fuels. Unfortunately, that's not a vote winner in Australia. Well, it might be. We just hope it will become that. But our political parties, both of them, have okayed this coal mining, although one party, the left-wing party, is doing some things towards climate change mitigation. We've had this meeting in Paris, as you'll know, that was very successful because it got a whole lot of countries to actually sign on to the existence of climate change, which is so late in coming, it's heartbreaking, but this could have happened 25 years ago. Science was there 25 years ago. Anyhow, a lot of countries, most countries in the world have signed on to that, but I'm afraid the premise is a false one. Their aim is to keep the world's increase in temperature below 2 degrees, and that's not possible. So we are in for a horrific time, and the only way of getting through this is to have countries committed doing big things towards stopping climate change.
And so most of my listeners do feel this threat to coral right in their hearts, I think. What can we do?
The main thing you can do is vote for politicians who are going to control, who say they're going to control fossil fuel mining and are going to support getting on to green energy. That's the strongest thing. But then there's the individual's lifestyle. And as you know, we're getting very fuel-efficient cars. And that makes a hell of a difference. And of course, we've got appliances in most houses, which are now becoming very efficient. And we've got to give technology the space, the time to develop and kick in. Unfortunately, if you go mining coal, that will always undercut the cost of the technology. And so the longer countries keep mining coal, and there's an awful lot of it yet to come, that will put the brakes on alternative technology for developing renewable resources. So Australia's doing really badly at that, I'm afraid.
So, Charlie, maybe we shouldn't leave this as a funeral. Would you tell us one or two stories about the strangeness of coral or the wonders that you've found?
Yes, I hate leaving this as a funeral. I hate being the doom and gloom merchant because most of my life, coral reefs have been fabulous places and I would never have even dreamt that this would ever change in this way. But to dive down on a healthy coral reef is really a fabulous experience. And I think one of the greatest times I've had in my life is diving at night and turning the torch off and just enjoying the moonlight. And the whole reef is just crawling with life. See life absolutely everywhere. And you can turn the torch on and it all changes. Colour suddenly leaps at you. There's nothing remotely like this. I think probably the nearest thing would be some spectacular rainforest garden or something like that. But coral reefs also have the intangible thrill of being, well, dangerous. You never know about some of the life that swims past you. But the overwhelming thrill of diving on beautiful reefs is just the diversity and just the amount, the quantity of living things that the reef supports. There's nothing like it anywhere on this planet, not even a rainforest. That is the great thrill of diving on a beautiful coral reef.
To me, it's like visiting the heartbeat of nature.
It definitely is that. There's nothing in the oceans that have anything like the diversity of coral reefs, not 1% of it. So for the oceans, that's it, coral reefs or somewhere else that's nothing remotely comparable. But for the whole world, I guess going into an Amazon-type rainforest and seeing the diversity of life there and the excitement and the thrills and that, all that, that's the next best thing. I think the greatest thrill you can ever have by, well, I love immersing myself in nature. I always have since I was a child, whether it be a forest or a reef. And to immerse yourself in a reef, just to take the time to just look around and really feel it, is one of the great privileges of living on this planet, I'll put it that way. It certainly is for me, and it is for an awful lot of people. Everyone should go see a coral reef because it will stay in their memory forever until they die. It is one of the most thrilling things, I think, you can do on Earth today as far as looking at nature is concerned. That's how I can put it, but there's nothing like it.
Well, John Viren, is better known as Charlie, has won numerous awards. His book, A Reef in Time, The Great Barrier Reef, From Beginning to End, is still the classic to read, in my opinion. And you can check my show blog at ecoshock.info for a link to that video of Charlie presenting to the Royal Society, introduced by David Attenborough. Charlie, thank you so much for sharing your time and for being such a good friend to coral during your lifetime.
Thanks, Alex, and what a nice interview that was. Appreciate it.
Radio EcoShock.